ESPN College Football Podcast.
The first college football playoff rankings are out, and there are surprises. Head-to-head matters most of the time. And what is going to happen to Cincinnati next? This is ESPN College Football Podcast. Reese Davis and David Pollack. And each and every Tuesday, and this is Tuesday, November 2nd, but it's a nighttime version of the podcast. We will be on after the rankings are released to give you immediate reaction to what we just saw. So, Georgia number one, Alabama number two, Michigan State number three, Oregon four, Ohio State five, and Cincinnati six. David Pollack, initial reaction when you saw the top of the rankings?
I was surprised that Cincinnati was so low. And I say that, Reese, because they've got a top 10 win at their place. So when I start looking at the other teams in the top, I mean, I can argue with Michigan State. They beat seven. I can argue with Oregon. They beat five. But when I look at Ohio State, there's not an impressive win over what Cincinnati has done. And if you look at the rest of the schedule, it's not really that impressive. So they just clearly said right away, like, we're going to take this off the table right now. Like, cause I don't know, Reese, if not now, when? Like, it's not going to get any better. Absolutely not going to get any better. So I don't understand why Cincinnati right now at this point in the season, when they have a top 10 on the road win, why they would not be higher.
I have them higher. And I agree with you, but I do think in fairness, and you're going to start calling me the senator after this, but in fairness,
I already do.
Well, I know, but we should point out you've got 13 people in the room, and the selection, the ranking process is not the same as the way the AP poll, for instance, is compiled, where everybody votes and they add it up and that's the end of it. They take groups of six teams. Top three vote getters advance, and the six teams are established by who gets the most votes. Then three are held over to the next group, and three more added, and so on. I said that to say, not to confuse people, to say, wait, what did he just say about how they do it? It's not as complicated if you look at it on paper. But I said that to say this, David. With 13 people, it only takes a couple of people to change their minds. And you also don't know how close it is in each individual committee member's mind. Wow. So I don't think it's set in stone from now on, but I do think it's a bad omen for Cincinnati. I think it's a bad omen, not only because they start six, they can recover from that. The bigger problem to me is you have 2 1-loss teams in their conference, one of whom they play, another one that they potentially would play, and neither are ranked. That's a problem.
No. And if you think about the teams behind them, they're chasing them. OU, if the OU goes undefeated with wins over Baylor and Oklahoma State, going to jump UC. No doubt about it. They're going to jump them. Michigan has an opportunity if they beat Ohio State. They can jump them. But if Ohio State beats them, Ohio State's going to stay there. It just looks really bleak for Cincinnati. I thought it would look better at this point in the season with all the chaos we've had, Reese. I just thought this was a chance where you'd see them in the top three, in the top four. And to me, with them not being there now and these other teams playing each other, it looks bad. It doesn't look good for Cincinnati.
Well, the best thing they have going for them is the fact that there has been so much upheaval, that there have been so many ranked teams lose to unranked opponents. The fact that they have two teams in front of them that if they stumble again, they're done. Alabama and Ohio State. And I think it's a little surprising that Alabama is number two.
I couldn't believe when you asked him and you put him on the chair, which you did a good job asking him, I couldn't believe that he was like, listen, it was Alabama and Georgia. That was easy. He was like, we were debating the next one. Like, he was like, that was clear.
And I don't know that I see that right now, but you know, there's a month to play down the stretch. And Alabama, don't misunderstand what I'm saying here. Alabama is every bit as good as all of those teams ranked below them, but some of the teams, they're equal in many cases. There's not the separation that there has been in your past, in my judgment, in terms of the eye test. But that's not a big deal to me, David, because you know, regardless of what the conspiracy theorists think, Alabama's not going with another loss unless there's, you know, like one, unless Georgia's the only undefeated team and everybody else has two losses, then maybe. But, but you know, absent something like that, that's going to take care of itself as the Michigan State, Ohio State, Michigan thing will eventually, probably.
So I was watching the ranking show and immediately I got very, very infuriated because I thought there was an immediate thing that jumped off the page. And I think y'all caught it and did a good job. Wisconsin? I mean, what in Sam heck am I missing, bro? Like, I want to ask you this question first and give you a second to think about it. I want you to give me a team that should be ranked that isn't ranked. And I'm going to give you right now, I don't understand how in the heck Wisconsin would be on that list over a team like Arkansas, who beat number 14 A&M. They lost to number one, which is no shame. Everybody loses to Georgia. They lost to 16 Ole Miss by two in a great game, and they lost to 13 Auburn. Like, but they beat A&M, who's 14. Wisconsin hasn't beaten jack crap. They've beaten Iowa, who's behind them, who's Iowa's ranked. I don't know how either, but I just – to me, I put Arkansas light years ahead of both of those two teams, and it's not close to me.
I agree with you 100%. No equivocating, no need for you to ask the senator to go on the record here. I don't know how Wisconsin and Iowa are both ranked. They're both, I know Wisconsin has sort of improved the running game lately or whatever. They're, both of those teams are half a team. And even Iowa has had a stumble on defense. Their offense is not up to the capabilities. They should not be ranked, in my judgment. But you know they're close to the end. You asked for a team that was behind. I didn't think Arkansas off the top of my head, even though they've had some close losses. Had a heartbreaking loss the other night. I would still have SMU among the top 25 teams in the country. I probably. Even with the opening loss to Texas Tech, considering that, I would probably, and I do, I would have Houston in the mix, but I would not have voted either of those teams in there. I was pleased to see that Minnesota was the highest ranked team from the Big Ten West, and they're a team that's got a bad loss on the resume too. So, you know, look, once you get down to the bottom,
It's
hard because they all have major flaws and warts, including the ones that I've mentioned. They haven't played the same level of competition that Wisconsin and Iowa have. And Iowa's got a very nice win at Iowa State. But where it matters is if they start using it to justify the higher ranked teams. Well, they played this team and it was ranked. You know, that's the problem. And you know. And I think that you have to look at it that way.
Well, I think you got some of that. You're going to have some of that with the Big Ten, with those teams being ranked, you know, down there near the bottom that are somehow ranked that I don't necessarily agree with. What about Wake Forest? Are they?
I was just about to ask you that. Yeah.
Are they? I see them. Listen, if we're going to look at their resume right now, it's boo boo. Like it's Louisville and Virginia, probably their best two wins, which ain't saying much. They gave up 6,672 points to be exact to Army. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Y'all talked about that on this show too. I'm interested if they run the table and they beat Clemson and I don't know. I think it could be interesting. What would it take for them to run the table? Like Oklahoma loses a game. Michigan, we think is going to lose another game. If Cincinnati, you know, stumbles, like what would it take for Wake Forest to get in this puppy?
Okay. First of all, they're not going to have a single impressive win. Maybe they beat Pittsburgh. They won't have, let me back up. I want to go back just for a second. Wake Forest is a great story and they're a really good team. But what we're talking about here is, are you one of the four best teams and deserving of getting into the playoff? That's the standard. Not are you good? Not have you taken care of your business? Are you one of the best? So if we get to the end and Wake Forest is undefeated, they're going to have a small handful of reasonably solid wins. They're going to have nothing that that blows you out of the water. So here's what it takes.
Probably won't have a top 25 win.
Maybe, yeah, because if they beat Pittsburgh, then Pittsburgh's not going to be in the top 25.
They'll probably knock them out of the top 25. Yeah,
exactly. So at any rate, here's what it would take, David. Just I'm looking at it top of my head. Michigan, Ohio State, that's going to take care of itself. Loser will be gone with two losses. They probably need Michigan State to run the table. That would probably be first. They need Georgia to run the table. So then you have two spots taken. And then what they would need beyond that is
Oregon to lose.
Oregon. Oregon, Oklahoma, and Cincinnati. They would need enough of those teams to lose to have one spot remaining left. They've got and that would be their only shot to get the four seed.
And they still might not be in it.
It might not.
They still might not be behind them. What about Oklahoma?
I think, first of all, I think Oklahoma's ranked lower than many people thought. That's a result of an eye test thing, I think. The fact that they came from 21 down against Texas, you get credit for that, but you also go, why are you having to do that? They had to hold off West Virginia, and they were West Virginia self-destructed. So it's, there's another one. Kansas was abysmal. You know, they were fortunate to get out of that with a victory. Maybe
Nebraska was a 7-point game.
A fortuitous call. Nebraska, Tulane, Kansas State. Yeah, it's just, it goes on and on and on. And so I think the eye test is what's getting Oklahoma. The good news for Oklahoma is that with playing Baylor, playing in the Bedlam game against Oklahoma State, if they keep looking the way they did against Texas Tech, that'll take care of itself. Or eventually one of these close calls will catch up with them. Let me hit you on Michigan State with something too, if you're going eye test. And again, we know how close all of this is. Michigan State, you know, jacked around with Indiana, beat them by 5, and, you know, good for them. Everybody's entitled to one. They also had the Nebraska game that they had no business winning. And yet, because Nebraska invents new ways to lose each and every week, Nebraska invented a way to lose to Michigan State. And so they did in overtime. But if you're going to evaluate that with Oklahoma, then you've got to look at it the same way with Michigan State. Although maybe the differentiating factor would be that they have high regard for Michigan, and Michigan State won that game. So there's a signature win there that Oklahoma really doesn't have.
Signature win, I would say that, you know, when we're starting to, you know, decide between small little things too, I think down the road, I think Michigan controlled that game pretty good. You know, Michigan State came back and won the game, and they deserved to win. But I look at Michigan State, and I love their identity of who they are. I love what they are. Kenneth Walker is the best player in college football. That's not for debate for me. We can talk about that another time. But consistently, man, you go watch that tape and there's two unblocked defenders in the hole and he makes a miss. And he consistently is so good. But I think about them versus Bama, them versus Georgia, a struggle bus. That would definitely be a struggle for them, but that's not what we're doing in the end. You know, we're picking the best four. And I can tell you this right now, they've got playmakers galore. We've seen it. They got a quarterback that's got some stones and makes plays when he needs to make plays. And Kenneth Walker at the running back spot. They play solid defense and make you earn it most of the time. I think Michigan's a really, really good team. But I think they could give Ohio State a lot of fits with that offense. They could give Ohio State all they wanted. But I don't know how – and we had this – me and you had this talk Friday last week. I don't know how good they are compared to – if I start comparing Michigan and Michigan State to Baylor, to Oklahoma State, to Kentucky, to those teams, I can't tell you definitively that they're clearly better than those teams. I can tell you
they're clearly better than one of them you just mentioned.
No.
But I think they're better.
State would be a great team.
Yeah, Oklahoma State and Baylor I'll listen to. Kentucky, I admire what they've done, but you just – I just can't get on board with anybody that turns the ball over that much. But, you know, they're in the top 20, and that's good for them. Could help their bowl positioning, and certainly they'll travel well. But a couple of other two-loss SEC teams, I think, are really compelling because of this. It's not really a far-fetched scenario that either Auburn or Texas A&M, whoever wins the game Saturday, will have a chance to play Georgia for the SEC championship. because A&M has a head-to-head against Alabama, so they need one more Alabama loss. And, you know, Auburn controls its destiny just as much as Alabama does. If they win, if Auburn wins the rest of its games, they're going to the SEC championship game. So, and we, and before you say, oh, that'll, you know, that can't happen, Bama's better or whatever, that, that's been a haunted mansion on the plains for Alabama down there over the years. You know, so we'll see. But if that were to happen and you had A&M or Auburn win the SEC, upset Georgia, and give Georgia its first loss in the SEC championship game, I don't see the scenario in which they, that two-loss team is in the playoff. I mean, absent again, much like we said about, you know, when you're asking about Wake Forest, absent utter anarchy, if it sort of stays at least semi, you know, according to script, reasonably according to script, I wouldn't expect that.
I got one for you. A&M does do that, and Alabama, you know, trips up. If I'm A&M, I'm going, I lost my quarterback. I got two losses because I played with a backup quarterback.
But you had your best wins with the backup quarterback, too.
Correct. But he also garnered experience and got better, and that's why we got a win down the road, because he improved. And then I finished the season really hot, and I go, did you see what I was working with? I was working with a kid that really, really struggled early in the season and then got better, and I showed you what my team was. So, and listen, Bo Nix early in the season versus Bo Nix now, he's a completely different player.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, he is remarkably better. Like, he got healthier. He got benched. He got more consistent in the pocket. He continued to grow and get better. So I think the part of this that we don't have the answers to now, Reese, is let's see it down the stretch, man. Let's see how this pony looks when it matters the most, when you start getting more pressure situations, when you continue to go on the road, when you play rivalries, like that, all that stuff is going to continue to matter, which is why we're not flipping out. That's why we're not losing our stuff. Unless I'm a UC fan, bro, I'd be losing my stuff because I just don't see it, man. I think this sucks for them. I mean, it absolutely sucks.
It may be, but I'm going to tell you this. I think Cincinnati is starting the last 2 weeks anyway. I'll be very interested to see how they play against another team they should overmatch in Tulsa. I think you're starting to see the signs of the weight of expectations. And they played, you know, I'll give you one. In fact, I almost expect one. I think it's unreasonable to expect any team, but particularly college teams, to play at their absolute best level every week for a long season like this. But if you're trying to do something special, as the Bearcats are, and you already have the obstacle to overcome of your conference not being the strongest and some teams expected to be good in your conference not really living up to billing, then you have to be close to exceptional almost every week. They've used up a mulligan and a half already. And I don't think it's because they aren't good, because I was talking to NFL guys this week. They've got, depending on which one you're talking to, between 9 and 11 guys that the NFL is watching closely. One guy I talked to in a front office in the NFL said that he felt like on the outside that Cincinnati would match up just fine with Oregon, with Oklahoma.
Anybody.
On the outside, yeah, and do okay on the outside against everybody. But do against Oregon and Oklahoma, they could also match them. They felt like they wouldn't be overwhelmed on the interior lines. Felt like they'd be overwhelmed by Georgia. Even that Peach Bowl notwithstanding last year, you know, I'm sort of tired of that Georgia was missing defensive guys. Well, a lot of the defensive guys are playing, and the ones that played in the Peach Bowl are playing now, you know, or some of them anyway, a good many of them. So, you know, I understand that, but from a talent standpoint, that's where he feels like they didn't stack up. So it's important for Cincinnati to look the part. And they haven't looked the part the last 2 weeks, and they need to start doing that. And they need to do it every game from here on out if they want to fight their way in.
And here's another thing I love. I don't know. And listen, I don't care where people are ranked right now. I'm not gonna get my panties in a while. I'm just not gonna do it. Like I don't care that much. I love Oregon being over Ohio State. I absolutely love it. Here's the thing. I watched Ohio State again. Penn State against the first decent team they've really played, Reese. Let's be honest. Like, they've played a bunch of boo-boo since Oregon. Like, they haven't played anybody remotely decent. They looked very human. They did not look like, obviously, they're not going to look like the dominant team that they've been over everybody else, averaging, you know, by beating them over 40. But I thought they, I thought you saw some things in that game that go, okay, they're not as dominant as we've seen. So guess what? Oregon beat them head to head across the country, 9 a.m., missing Thibodeau. Like, all that stuff has to matter. And you know what else has to matter too? And I said it at the time, Reese, and I'm going to say it again. Forehead did not call plays for Stanford. They struggled like crap early in that game. They looked like a team without their offensive coach. It came down to the wire, you know, questionable PI, whatever. Go on. They should have won the game. They lost, but I know they beat Ohio State, and I'm okay with them being ahead of Ohio State. Were you?
Yeah, I mean, I am, but I'm not just going to dismiss the loss. Stanford is ungood.
Oh no, what's going to happen wrong next to us?
And that's a bad loss.
Oh no, what's going to happen wrong next to us? Oh no,
yeah, I need some help with the ungood. To us. It's I mean, that's not a vintage Stanford team. I understand that sometimes a team has your number.
No. I'm going to need you to stop. I'm tired of hearing that from Kirk and everybody else. Haven't had a vintage Stanford team in a long time. Okay.
Yeah. So 2015.
This is the reality of what Stanford is. Like, yeah. I need to stop with the narrative of it's not a vintage Stanford team. The Stanford team we've seen for the past 4 or 5, 6 years now is very average. That's what they are.
I agree. Yeah. And you know how down I was on them after watching their opening game against Kansas State. They certainly improved a couple of times. That's a bad loss for so. If you give them huge credit for the best win of the season, then you have to also evaluate the bad loss, which it was. It wasn't the worst loss of the season. It wouldn't be like, you know, Oklahoma losing to Kansas if they lost that game. That would have been the worst loss in the modern era of college football. And worse than Stanford, USC in 2007. Yes, it would have been. I've got reasons for that, but let's not bore our listeners. But, you know, it's not that, but it's a bad loss. And it has to be evaluated just like everything else. But, you know, you mentioned the head-to-head. It mattered most of the time. It gave Oregon the edge over Ohio State. It gave Wisconsin with an extra loss the edge over Iowa. It gave Mississippi State with an extra loss. I was a little surprised to see them ranked, by the way. It gave them the edge.
17.
Yeah.
No big deal.
It gave them the edge over Kentucky. Which, by the way, Mississippi State's got the weirdest resume you can imagine because they've got a couple of good wins and they've got a couple of horrible losses, you know, too.
So, where did head to head not carry the day? Because Oklahoma State over Baylor,
Penn State's not ranked and they beat Wisconsin. They, you know, I mean, it left them unranked and they lost to Iowa, I guess.
Penn State lost to Iowa with their backup quarterback. Let's be fair, right? Mm-hmm. They beat Auburn, who the committee has at 13. So how the heck is Penn State? They beat Wisconsin, who's 21. I don't get it. Listen, bad loss to Illinois, like bad loss. Again, starting quarterback looked 60%, 70%. Team looked different against Ohio State. I just, you can't tell me they're not rankable.
You know, here's my final word on it. And then we're going to turn the page, I think, in just a second. Don't turn the page on me yet, Taylor, until I finish here. If you have a bad loss, at least, and look, there are 6 new members on the committee, 5 true new members. Ty Willingham's back for a second stint. So I don't think it's fair to say the committee has always done this or that. There are new people on it. Almost half the members are new. But at least from the opening set of data that we have, if you have a bad loss, you better have offset it with a big win.
Yep,
you know, I think, that's the thing. And in Oregon's case, they've been able to offset it. Before we move on, 2 things I want to mention. The Book of Boba Fett is coming to Disney Plus on December 29th. But starting today, you can watch the trailer for this thrilling Star Wars adventure of the legendary bounty hunter Boba Fett. Follow the journey as he navigates a galaxy's underworld to stake their claim on the territory once ruled by Jabba the Hutt. That's The Book of Boba Fett. Check out the trailer on Disney Plus and listen to ESPN's newest podcast, Swagoo and Perk. It's led by NFL veteran analyst Marcus Spears, that's Swagoo, and NBA champion and analyst Kendrick Perkins. New episodes every Tuesday morning. Swagoo and Perk touch on the NFL, the NBA, their lives, their journeys, and can't miss conversations with the top names in sports and entertainment. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcast. And now we turn the page to this week, because everybody gets all up in arms about these rankings. And each and every week, Pollock, we've had mammoth upsets. It's approaching 2007 level in terms of number of top 10 teams losing to unranked opponents and number of ranked teams losing to unranked opponents. And there are a number of intriguing games this weekend, though not necessarily ranked versus ranked. We've already touched on these two teams a little bit. Maybe a big picture, most impactful game of this week will be Auburn at Texas A&M. And I know Matt Corral was hurt. I know they had some problems on the offensive line the other night, but I thought Auburn was really, really impressive in the victory against Ole Miss last Saturday night. And I think they've got a real chance to go into Kyle Field and win the game. What say you?
I agree. Danzy Swanson just went yard, so we're up 5-0.
Oh, that's great. I'm a lifelong Braves fan, and I know by the time that people download this, they will know what happened. I've got it on here too, and I see Lieutenant Dansby going yard. I was a Braves fan when they had Pepe Frias and Roland Office and Brian Asselstein, so I'm going to revel in this if we can hold on. But I also saw us blow a lead to the Yankees when we were up big in Game 5, so I'm not getting overly excited.
You said Brian, what's his name, Ahole?
Brian Asselstein. He was a really terrific outfielder for the Braves, and he was the reason that they ended up putting the plexiglass over the chain link fence in old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, because Asselstein was going to try to make a play at the fence and got his spike hung and tore up his ankle, and he was never really quite the same.
Ouch. Okay. Yeah. Well, on to Bo Nix. I don't disagree. These two are ranked right there next to each other too. So one of them is going to get a big bolster or a big boost right here for beating the other one, which will be interesting. But man, I think Auburn looks good. I tell you what, fun to watch Auburn, like from an offensive standpoint, like actually have answers and run offense that you go, hey, that makes sense. I mean, we've looked at them for years, and you look at the route tree and you're like, oh my God, this is the easiest thing to defend ever. Like, And so now not only do you have structure and Tank Bigsby and Hunter running downhill, you got Bo Nix playing within himself, making plays, Demetrius Robinson, and then making the off scripted plays, them getting healthier on defense. I think Auburn's a team for sure, you know, down the stretch that could make a lot of people happy, because if they can find a way to beat Alabama late, your team becomes more viable for that four-team spot. Like, there's a lot of people that should be cheering Auburn on.
Well, the team that might be happiest with them might be Texas A&M, the team they play. If A&M wins, then they just need an Alabama stumble and to finish their business. And I think that I think they're going to have their hands full for whatever reason. It's like the road team has played a little better in this series in recent years. But A&M with the running game and some of the talent that they have on the lines of scrimmage, that's one thing. But the biggest thing to me about the Aggies, David, is that sometimes you need a breakthrough. They had a really good season last year, really good, and they got blown out by Alabama. They were stumbling, season right on the edge, and they beat Alabama this year. And since then, I know it's only been a couple games, they've looked different. They look like a team that believes. It's a huge thing. I don't want to stick on A&M, but I think it's the problem on different levels with Michigan and Nebraska. Michigan can't win a big game. They find a way to lose the game. They don't put it away when they have a chance. It's like mental. It's like the weight of the world and just that little half percent that when you tighten up, when you're trying too hard, ends up costing them. Nebraska, it's not just big games, it's any games. And I know Scott's questioned some of their effort and so forth, but they kind of have that issue as well. A&M, I feel like, kind of had that issue, and that is gone. Now, they think they take the field, they run out, they think they're winning, and that's powerful.
Yeah. It is powerful, and I can speak to that as a player, man. It just, when you believe, it changes it. It changes everything. There's a difference between your coach telling you, you can do this, you can do this, but when you go do it, you're like, this is freaking awesome. Like, this is great. Like, it's just, the confidence can't be, you can't even explain how much it helps you. But I think, you know, listen, I don't know if A&M got some deficiencies on the O-line. They've done a bunch of different, you know, lineups. I think A&M is really good. I think Auburn's got a real shot to go to Kyle Field and beat them. I mean, I think, you know, I actually would lean towards Auburn first because I just feel like their offense, I think, has a lot of answers and is playing really, really well.
All right. I agree with you, by the way. And in, of the many things in the preseason that I was wrong about, the one thing I was right about was this. From our years of knowing Brian Harsin and how he operates in the preseason, I said, Bo Nix will either get better or he won't play. And as it turns out, both things happened. he didn't play, and he also has gotten better in response. And he looks like a different cat. Wake Forest, North Carolina. Now, that's not a conference game, which I love that idea. They're going to play anyway, even if with the big leagues, you know, you're not scheduled to play each other. But this might be, given the stakes,
Just tell me the over under on this one.
It is 76, I believe. Would you take over? Pollock, is that your money back guarantee that Wake Forest, North Carolina will go over?
40 to 30s. Yeah. I don't see how it goes under. I mean, I don't see it, man. I'm not going with that. No, that's not my, I can't depend on Wake Forest and North Carolina. Those two teams. No, absolutely not. But I've been very disappointed in North Carolina. Okay. I'll be the first to tell you. I'm very, very disappointed. Me like too. By the way, the recruiting is still skyrocketing. They're still getting guys, but we've talked about this too. I think it's easy to create momentum, but it's hard to sustain it, and they're not sustaining it. And, but Wake Forest, obviously last year, Wake Forest should have beat North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Very easily could have beat North Carolina.
It was my super dog. They blew
the
it.
The way Sam Hart. Yes, I remember they were up big. You thought for sure you had it, but Wake Forest, yeah. Man, Sam Hartman's a man. He's a grown mm-hmm. man. He's going to score points. North Carolina's got the offense, you know, cooking a little bit more, and they're going to score points. It's definitely going to be a high scoring game. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the over, but that's got to be one of the highest over unders we've ever seen.
Michigan State at inexplicable Purdue, whether you're going to get Purdue playing Purdue-y. At the top of its game, or they're going to show their Purdue-iness and not play there. But this is the spot. This is the spot where Purdue usually shows up, and it's usually the spot where Sparty face plants. A very good friend of mine used to work with us, works at the Big Ten Network as a researcher now, Harold Shelton, always called him Sparty because he was such a big Spartan fan, is worried to death that this is like their trip to Nebraska in 2015 when they end up making the playoff anyway, but that they go in a game they're supposed to win and they don't perform and they lose. Do you think Michigan State is in trouble? They're only favored by a field goal. I think they're in trouble. I don't want to fall into the Purdue-ness trap again.
I really want you to. I want you to give me this, your guarantee. I want you to put your life savings on Purdue.
All right. I'm sorry to do this because I'm really fond of Mel Tucker and Kenneth Walker, but you've goaded me into this. I'm not going to do it. I can't do it. How many times? You know what it is? I picked Auburn to beat Ole Miss last week, even though I thought Ole Miss was the better team. And the reason was, how many times do you have to see it, Reese? How many times do you have to see it before you do it? Now, I know Purdue has knocked off teams. I know that famously beat Ohio State badly with Rondale Moore. I want to, David, but I can't. I can't.
So I need to get confirmation. I need to get confirmation on this.
Okay.
I have a buddy. His name's Jay. and he has told me about his betting trends. And I want to share this with the people. He says, like last week, he took Rutgers and he took Michigan State. And he said this, he said, there is a thing. Look who storms the field. The next week, take them to lose.
Right. Yeah.
Whoever storms the field, the next week, take them to lose. He took Rutgers to beat Illinois this past week. Like, he took Michigan State. Like, there's a lot of examples that he's used. And he was like, Purdue this week, you got to look at Purdue. But it just sets up perfect.
I'm picking it. I just don't know if I'm going to go. I think I am anyway. It's a tough one. Although, I tell you what, talking to Kenneth Walker tonight, Mel's been pounding this home. Mel is aware.
He should.
He is fully aware. If it happens, it won't be because they weren't warned. It won't be because it wasn't emphasized.
Mel Tucker's, I mean, you could not have been any better asking Mel Tucker in one sentence to describe Michigan, and it couldn't have been a better answer. I don't like them. There was no minced word. If you've ever been around Mel, he doesn't mince words. He doesn't waste words. Mel's not a man of many words. When he speaks, his players listen, I guarantee to you. And he was just like, listen, I hate Michigan. They suck, basically. That's what he said.
He didn't say that. Just to be clear, he didn't say that verbatim.
That's what he said on the inside. He basically said, blank Michigan, they suck, I hate them, carry on.
Well, then that means he's just like D'Antonio, who didn't care. He didn't care much except.
Boy, little brother just keeps beating the crap out of big brother.
I'm not going to be a favorite in East Lansing because I was last week when I said, for a little brother, sure acting like their daddies. I think they won 10 of the last 14 now.
Little brother, he's either all grown up and huge or he just keeps having baseball bats and frying pans and something to come kick the crap out of big brother. But I tell you what, man, Mel Tucker's got it roll. I hope he stays. I hope he stays at Michigan State because I think he's just scratching the surface of what he can do. I think he can change recruiting in the Big Ten. I think he can do some special things in Michigan State.
And something that's kind of off the radar a little bit, but it's going to be a theater of the bizarre. Noon, SEC Network, Hugh Freeze, who you know well, goes back to Oxford. How weird do you think it's going to be for Hugh Freeze to walk in that stadium after all of the good things they accomplished and after the all of the problems he created for himself that led to his demise and departure from Ole Miss? How weird do you think it'll be?
I think that'll be strange, man. Just being in that stadium, being on the other sideline, being in the other locker room, like of your dream job, of someplace where you spent a lot of time with, where you had a lot of good memories. You beat number one Alabama. You have, so many good things that happened to you, but then to get thrown out and going back. And if I was him, I'd have been like, listen, AD, just get me out of this game, please. Like, don't let me go back.
No doubt. And you know what? Now, look, I'm glad they didn't because it gives us some great theater in the last hour of game day, I think, for a game that otherwise would be sort of, but that gives you a little theater. Not just Hugh Freeze, David. Why does Ole Miss play this game? Write the check, trade non-conference opponents with somebody else in the league. So if I were an Ole Miss, there is no way I'd want him to come back there and, bring Malik Willis. And, I know they're not afraid, but there's just no upside to it, And you bring back the story. It's sort of bizarre. I'm delighted that they're doing it because it gives us some theater, but it's very strange. I think that's a weird one. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun. One other thing, I tell you, let's do this though. Give me your money back guarantee. And I've got something I need to say at the end here. What's your money back guarantee this week? And you can also play good and ungood if you want to with me before we go. How about Florida State, NC State?
I was thinking about the Wolfpacking.
You've been a bad. How about Tennessee?
I think Tennessee's sexy too versus Kentucky. I'll go that. All right. My guarantee is that the Seminoles Not only don't blow the spread. Thank you, by the way. We appreciate you for the Superdog standings and ruining Desmond Howard's cover at the
end. Oh man, yeah, that was so awful. Okay,
Thank you, Clemson. I hate that for you, Des. But that was beautiful to watch. I'm going Florida State, man. I think you were onto the Wolf Packing. I just think one thing I saw with what they struggled with against Miami was speed. And Florida State's got enough speed and that running quarterback. I love Drake Thomas. I love that NC State defense. But, you know, I don't think those guys are going to be catching Florida State the whole game. I like what Florida State's doing. I think Florida State gets that dub.
Okay.
Guaranteed for your money back.
My guarantee is not for the ultimate outcome, but my money back guarantee is that Washington will have a lead at some point in the second half on Oregon.
Guaranteed. For your money back.
After all of this Oregon feeling great, they get the benefit of the head-to-head. Now they're going into a place that hates them, and they hate them right back, even to the point where although Oregon may be under directive from the university president to run up the score if they can after the academic jab that Jimmy Lake threw their way. But I think just because of what
I respect, I respect the heck out of you for having the quijones to do that, and I see it. But I've watched Washington several times this year, and I only watch them when I need to go to bed.
Okay,
let me sleep really quickly.
Did you see Oregon for three quarters against Arizona? Did you see Oregon for the whole game?
Did you watch
against
Washington
versus
Arizona? Washington should have lost to Arizona.
I know. They will have a lead. I don't think they'll win the game. And Oregon will probably end up covering. I think Washington will have a lead in the second half against Oregon. That is just a gut feeling. Nothing more than that. This week ended an era in college football that is probably not fully appreciated across the country. And that's Gary Patterson finishing his career at TCU. He won. He built the stadium. He made TCU an attractive brand. They elevated conferences right and left, and he won just about all of them when he got TCU there. Short of what Bill Snyder did at Kansas State, I think in the modern era that Gary Patterson's building job is the greatest building job in the modern era of college football. Second only to Bill Snyder, which is in a category all by itself, because Kansas State was literally the worst program in the history of the sport at that level until Snyder turned it around. TCU wasn't that. They certainly had some history back in the 30s. But what he did, getting them on the cusp of playing for the BCS championship, making them a Rose Bowl champion at TCU, having them arguably get jobbed in the first iteration of the playoff, but however you wanted to slice that, getting close to it is stunning. They have a statue built to him, as well they should. Yep. It was going sideways. I understand that maybe it was time for the change. But this guy should be appreciated not just because he tied his shoes and hitched his pants and coached up some great defenses over the years. What he did is stunning and remarkable and deserves respect in the annals of the sport as one of the great building jobs ever, ever. And you know, he's one of the great coaches in our generation, I think, David.
And I don't think you could speak to many defensive coaches in the country that weren't influenced by him. I mean, he had methods and madness to him that were crazy. You know, the match schemes in the back, like he did such a great job with his defensive outfits and really revolutionized defense, changed defense, changed the way people play it, changed the way they thought about it. And so he did an unbelievable job. It does stink. It stunk to watch them. You know, they've struggled so bad this season and struggled defensively the last couple of years. But that doesn't change the fact of every coach in college football, I promise you, would have some kind of Gary Patterson-ism in their defense, that the reason they do what they do and why they do it, that comes from him and his defense is finding a way to beat inferior offenses, way inferior offenses, way more talented offenses, taking less talented kids most of the time throughout his career and owning Texas, like in beating mm-hmm. Oklahoma, you know, doing some of those things that it's special, man.
And Gary Patterson will join us on College Game Day this week. Pollock, one of these days, this podcast is going to be so popular that we're going to get you some high-speed internet. It's going to be amazing when that happens.
Good luck. Go All Braves! Right.
Stay in that Roman study and go Braves. See you this weekend.